Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Nate Silver is with us now, the statistics maven who is known for getting it right a lot on who'll do well in Major League Baseball and presidential elections based on his number-crunching algorithms. He writes the New York Times blog 538, which was named for the number of electoral votes in a presidential race, 538. He is also the author of the new book, The Signal and the Noise, Why So Many Predictions Fail, But Some Don't. Hi, Nate. Welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, good morning, Brian.
So suddenly you're in the news yourself for predicting an Obama re-election with so much certainty that you offer Joe Scarborough a $2,000 bet, the loser pays the Red Cross if he takes you up on it. Why don't you take a minute or two and lay out for our listeners how you came to your prediction?
So what we do, it's pretty simple, really, is we look at the polls in individual states and we count who's leading in the states and how that translates to the Electoral College. So right now, Obama's ahead in states like Ohio, Iowa, Nevada, Wisconsin, that would allow him to win the Electoral College with a little bit of margin to spare. Florida and Colorado and Virginia are very close right now. But that's where we come to our conclusion, just basically looking up where the polls are on average in these states and doing the math, and we get to more than 270 electoral votes for Obama right now.
How specifically are you predicting Obama's path to Electoral College victory? In other words, which swing states do you think he'll win and which will he lose if that's the way you're doing it?
So we do have him ahead in Ohio. He's been up in, I think, 13 of the last 15 polls in Ohio by an average of 2 or 3 points. We have him winning Iowa, basically doing well in the Midwest, winning Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Nevada, which has become more and more of a Democratic-leaning state over the years. If Harry Reid won there in 2010, we've seen a lot of Democratic registration edge and early voting edge in Nevada. So those states look problematic for Romney. He might win Florida. He might win Colorado. He seems to be a little bit behind there, but Colorado's not his biggest problem. But still, if you kind of add up, just count the votes is where we're at. If the polls are right, then Obama will be reelected.
You have Obama at an 81% chance of victory, up 8 points in the last week. Do I have that right?
We do, and I should say one thing, which is that if you give Romney a 20% chance of victory, a week ago people gave about a 30% chance that the New York subway system would be flooded, as it was. So people maybe don't kind of grasp probabilities intuitively very well. But it's a realistic chance that Romney could win if the polls are off in one state. They may be off in several different states, and that would tip the balance in the Electoral College. But I also think that if you're looking at the election as a toss-up, it means that you're not really looking at the state-by-state polls where Obama seems to have an edge headed into the final weekend here.
How about your probability for Ohio, if you've done that? With what you just gave us, and if I remember what you just said correctly, 15 out of 17 recent polls give Obama a lead in Ohio of an average of 2 or 3%. 2 or 3% is within the margin of error usually, but that is 15 out of 17 polls, which increases the reliability. So statistically, are you saying Obama has an X percent chance of winning Ohio?
Well, he has about an 80% chance of winning Ohio. Those two numbers, the overall Electoral College chance and the Ohio chances, basically are parallel to one another because it's very, very hard for Romney to have a winning map without Ohio. It's not impossible for Obama to do it, but certainly he'd be an underdog, a big underdog, if he loses Ohio. But so those numbers, basically, in some ways, it all comes down to this one state. And sometimes what we call the tipping point state is different every year. But this year, the cliches are true. Ohio really is the most important state in the Electoral College.
Nate Silver from the New York Times 538 blog, with us also the author of The Signal and the Noise, Why So Many Predictions Fail, But Some Don't. So usually you're a little in the background as a numbers geek, an analyst of polls and polling methods, but suddenly you're in the hot seat. When I entered your name on Google News today, I got headlines like, Why Nate Silver's Bet Makes Me Trust Him More on The Atlantic, The War on Nate Silver on Truthdig, and Nate Silver, One-Term Celebrity on Politico. How does it feel?
It's odd where, I had some attention and notoriety in 2008, but I think for some reason I've become kind of a symbol of this idea that Obama's the favorite right now, which if you go out and actually look at what people are betting on, if you look at the odds that are set by London bookmakers or in Las Vegas, they're very, very similar to where our model has the forecast right now. And so are other political scientists and analysts who analyze the information the same way that we do. But for better or for worse, we get a lot of attention, and that's why I do try to emphasize that, look, Romney could win. It's going to be a close election no matter what. But if you look at the Electoral College map, it's also fairly basic arithmetic about who's ahead. So you're now at the point where there's probably not enough time for Romney to change the polls between now and Tuesday. We had a decent jobs report this morning for what it was worth. So he has to just hope that the polls are off. And they don't have to be that far off for Romney to win.
So what's this whole thing between you and Joe Scarborough?
Well, you know, Joe has a big platform, and he went on TV and basically called the names. And so I said, well, Joe, if you really think the election's a toss-up, then let's maybe make a bet on behalf of charity, where if Obama wins, I think he's the favorite, then I'll donate $1,000 to the American Red Cross, or you donate $1,000. If Romney wins, then I will. And it kind of got escalated a bit, as Twitter sort of can escalate things, but he wound up donating money just on his own, as I did as well. I donated $2,538 to put my stamp on it, sort of. I would encourage people, of course. I mean, I'm one of those lucky people who's not had my power out. The New York Times office is in fine shape. But, you know, this is a more important story than what some geek thinks about the election right now. So do look out for people in harm's way in your life and donate if you can.
Indeed. You got your wrist slapped by the Times public editor on her blog, who questions the propriety of a Times journalist making any kind of a bet, even for charity.
Yeah, I kind of think I used to play poker. And to me, if you're willing to bet on something, it indicates honor and integrity. It means you're willing to kind of put your money where your mouth is. Now, I know it's not maybe a traditional view exactly in all schools of journalism necessarily, although I would say I think Margaret Sullivan's a very good public editor for the Times, and she's also an independent voice. And that's how the New York Times works, that you have a lot of people who might disagree on things, but they give their people, they trust their people to kind of make their own choices and decisions and to represent what they think is a point of view that has a lot of integrity as well as the paper overall.
So your argument is what I did still has integrity.
Yeah, I think so. And I should say no one was going to actually make money from this bet. The American Red Cross was going to get money either way. It was just a matter of who would pitch in. But yeah, I think some of the conventions in journalism, right? The whole idea that you're not invested in your reporting or not invested in the outcome, to me is very strange. You know, I think people tend to do better when they have a financial motivation to be correct, right? I'm not intending to get into some huge war about how journalism is done necessarily, but to me it's a very natural thing. I guess maybe I kind of played the Mitt Romney kind of $10,000 bet role, but it was for charity in this case. And like I said, both Joe and I wound up donating on our own, and so I think it wound up having a good ending here.
Well, I guess the New York Times has a financial stake in being accurate in its journalism. If it's accurate a lot, people will trust it and people will buy the paper and advertise in it and all that stuff. Do you think Mayor Bloomberg's endorsement of Obama yesterday has any Electoral College or popular vote implications?
If you look at how Mayor Bloomberg is perceived outside of the New York area, I'm not sure it's going to have a whole ton of impact. Maybe in a state like New Hampshire or something, where you have a lot of kind of moderate northeastern voters. But, you know, like I think, frankly, that the overall response of the White House to Hurricane Sandy, I think the fact that he was walking on a beach with Chris Christie, for example, is probably a bigger, more important development. And the jobs report this morning, which was not fantastic by any means, but better than we've seen for much of the year, I think those are the more important last-minute developments.
In your book, you write about predicting hurricanes and global warming. How are you looking at Sandy through the lens of hurricane predictions?
Well, so the amazing thing about this storm is that as bad as it was, there were people saying 4 or 5 days before it hit how bad it would be. And in fact, they pinpointed the landfall location in southern New Jersey almost exactly many, many days in advance. And that would not have been possible 20, 25 years ago, where basically we missed on average by a couple hundred miles about where a hurricane would hit. So 200 years ago, we might think it was going to hit Maryland or Virginia or North Carolina. They would hit New Jersey by surprise. So people did have a chance here to be prepared. Not everyone did prepare, but it helped save lives and property, I think.
And what about global warming? That is either a statistician's nightmare or field of dreams, because there are so many variables that prediction models of the long-term impact can vary on.
Well, that's the thing. It's hard to peg any one particular event to global warming, to climate change. If you have the collective, though, of events, maybe it adds up a little bit more, but it is difficult. The problem with that is that we're making predictions that reach 50 or 100 years into the future. What's important, though, is to remember that the basic science behind global warming, you know, it used to be called the greenhouse effect. I think maybe it still should. The greenhouse effect's been understood for almost literally 150 years. It's a very basic chemical relationship where you put more carbon in the atmosphere or reflects back down and makes the planet warmer. And so I think sometimes that's an area where too much can get lost in the details when the basic kind of chemistry behind it is very simple. So I almost say in that case, trying to predict the exact impacts definitely is hard. There is uncertainty, but it does not negate the basic premise of the fact that the planet could have a problem with this.
Last thing, what percentage chance are you giving to the scenario where Obama wins the electoral vote but Romney wins the popular vote?
I think it's a chance, but we think it's more of a 5 or 10% chance than a super high chance. One thing is, if you look at the most recent national polls, Romney's no longer winning the national polls. Seems to be tied or maybe Obama ahead by half a point. But if things shift even a little bit toward Obama, he should win both. If they shift a modest amount toward Romney, it won't take that much for him to win Ohio. So you really have to kind of hit the bullseye to have that split outcome. It's definitely more likely than usual this year, given how close the election is. But I wouldn't take for granted that's where we're headed. There are a lot of polls are good, but not they're imperfect instruments, and we have to be very precisely on the nose to get that exact outcome.
Nate Silver, he writes the 538 blog for the New York Times, which was named for the number of electoral votes in a presidential race, and he's the author of the book The Signal and the Noise, Why So Many Predictions Fail, But Some Don't. Nate, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, our special coverage of the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy continues on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio, with Nancy Solomon in New Jersey next, and then the New York State Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, on how to avoid scams and ripoffs that are Sandy-related. Stay with us.